You are Locked On Wolverines, your daily podcast on the Michigan Wolverines, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Happy Sunday. Did not get to the post game, thanks to just general busyness. Locked On Wolverines podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it is your team every day. I am your man on the ground, Isaiah Hull, publisher of Wolverines Wire through USA Today Sports Media Group. If you are watching on YouTube, I am very methodically wearing Michigan gear that you can go out and get from people who support us, or have supported us, rather. Home field, you can get this awesome, most comfortable hoodie. I also have the joggers, which you can't see. Those I'm just wearing out of straight comfort. And then we've got the Michigan versus Everybody Valiant hat you can get at MDN. But let's, before we get into Michigan's 34-27 game against Maryland, and I do certainly have a lot of thoughts. I workshopped a lot of them on the walk home yesterday. I want to give a shout out to the Sklar brothers. I really like it. It means so much to me, running into you on the sidelines and hearing that you listen to the podcast every day. You know all about Zuri, the issues with the venting in my basement, all of that stuff, because I've been giant fans of yours for decades now. So it was very very, very, very much appreciated that you showed me your support, and I really appreciate you guys. All right, let's get into this game. Michigan 34, Maryland 27. Of course, the game did not go at all how I predicted. That's how the nature of college football works, right? Like if everyone knew exactly what was going to happen in every game, anyone who ever put a dollar on a game would be a millionaire. And it doesn't work that way, right? But honestly, the more I think about it, the kind of more I look back at the game, really Michigan was very close to doing a lot of the things that would have put it in that situation where it would have been winning by, you know, three scores or so. I know some of the things didn't look very good at times, but a lot of the things that didn't look good at times looked good in other parts of the game. So that's the important thing. And it's one of those things where it's like, don't let the final score and the final stats necessarily deceive you. Maryland went on a 75-yard drive at the end of the game, right? And for all of like the kind of hand-wringing I felt like there was over the defense, it still was mostly pretty good. Now, I would have liked to have seen better tackling. Of course, that was a big issue with both Tagovailoa as well as Edwards when he came in on the final drive. But when I'm looking at the... I have to like crane my neck around the microphone to see the screen here. Maryland finished with 397 yards on the day. Now, it would have finished with about, you know, 300 and something. I just remember like low 300s, which facing up against a team like Maryland, that's really very good. Obviously, going in to prevent defense and just trying, you know, you have the game essentially in hand. It's going to change things a little bit. So 269 total yards of passing, 62 of those came in that final drive. I'm fine with that, right? The run defense felt pretty bad, but ultimately, when you look at it, 34 carries for 128 yards, that's 3.8 yards per carry. Given the bulk, this is one of those things where it's for me, it's hindsight, because there are certain things I predict because I overlook something that I know that in the time that I shouldn't overlook. I'm pretty sure I mentioned on Friday's podcast. If not, that's totally on me. Maryland had a bunch of bulk and experience up front, and that really showed with the offensive line protection. I think that a lot of people were saying, I was getting a lot of texts during the game. I even had some people saying this during the game. They said Michigan's just not getting any pressure up front, even in the first half. They were. It's if you go back and rewatch it, or you know, you're not going to be able to, you don't have access to all of my pictures, but looking at all of my pictures that I took during the game, a lot of the times with Talia Tagovailoa, there was a lot of times where he was making a throw and there's a guy that's just about one or two steps just outside. They're forcing a lot of throws. I think one of the big differences between this year's Maryland team and the one we saw last year, and why, because it was very similar last year. I'd have to look exactly, but Michigan wasn't getting a lot of pressure in that game either. Michigan had three sacks in this game. Let's go back and look at what it was in 2021. Because as far as I remember, Michigan didn't have a heck of a lot of sacks in that game. It was just that it was kind of similar, except as far as the pressure that was put on, the difference being that Tagovailoa didn't have a whole bunch of guys that he could rely on to still throw the ball out to. So Michigan had two sacks last year, one by Vincent Gray and one by TJ Guy. TJ Guy's came obviously in garbage time. So it's relatively similar in that light. And I thought that they were getting okay pressure. They just weren't getting home in and they started getting a little bit better in the second half. Ultimately, the defense looked a lot better in the second half. So that's the important thing, that they found a way to kind of slow them down. And certainly this game could have gone a lot differently. That's and if Michigan didn't make a lot of mistakes, and it made a lot of mistakes across the board, all three phases. Obviously, stalling out drives, whether it was fumbles that were lost, like C.J. Stokes' fumble, whether it was dying over here. Whether it was C.J. Stokes' fumble or all right, here we are with take two here. I'm just about coughing fit. So, whether it was C.J. Stokes' fumble or it was J.J. McCarthy, essentially just kind of stalled, you know, that one play that kind of stalled out the drive, all of that kind of stuff really bit Michigan as far as driving the ball. But Michigan didn't punt until the second half. Ultimately, I believe Michigan punted, what, like three times in the entire game? Something like that? Yeah, three times in the entire game. I mean, so did Maryland, unfortunately, but Michigan also forced two turnovers. And so, I mean, I think that there's a lot to build on here. Michigan also went for three field goals. Maryland went for two. Michigan went for three. So, ultimately, it's a lot to clean up, but there were a lot of plays that were left out there on the field. There were a lot of times in which you watch that game, and it's like, okay, it could have been, I mean, yes, it could have been worse, but it could have been a lot better if J.J. McCarthy hits on any of those deep throws, like we'd kind of seen earlier in the season. Game is over really soon. If you don't have the fumble by C.J. Stokes while Michigan's on like the 20, Michigan goes up two scores early, puts Maryland on its heels. I predicted both, actually, and the only person that can corroborate this is Bryce Marich from the Michigan Insider. I predicted both within about a minute of it happening that Talia Tagovailoa was going to throw those interceptions. Why? Because he predictably tries to make too much happen, and Michigan's defense was in the general vicinity of the receivers that he was trying to make things happen with. So that's not really something that I thought was like an anomaly. It was more of the ebb and flow of the game. And listen, sometimes a team is going to figure some things out against you, and that was what Maryland did. Well, let's continue talking about it. I've got plenty more thoughts on that as well. But before we do move on, and I have to wait here. Here we go. This episode is brought to you by Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to spice up college football season. Listen, in my pick 'em this weekend, I liked UNC. I thought I liked Notre Dame. I liked Drake May. I liked all of that above Notre Dame, and I was wrong. It happens, right? I in my separate parlays, there were just teams that just did not cover. Michigan, I'm looking at you. Anyway, you can go and make the same types of picks like I just did. It is a great app. It is absolutely incredible. It's easy to play and available in over 30 states. Just pick between 2 and 5 players across any team, not just your team, and decide if they'll finish higher or lower. It is one of the easiest fantasy to play games out there, and you can win cold hard cash in a single game. So sign up using the promo code LOCKEDON. That's one word, LOCKEDON. And Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100. Deposit $100, you get $100 free. Go to UnderdogFantasy.com or find the Underdog Fantasy app in the App Store or Google Play Store. That's Underdog Fantasy, promo code LOCKEDON, all one word. Get in on the college football pick'em action today. Like I said, he missed a lot of those throws downfield that he would normally get. You kind of got in this game the same type of game that we, not this year, but last year, were accustomed to seeing with Cade McNamara, right? Missing downfield guys, to some degree kind of dinking and dunking, not particularly mobile, but sometimes making one big run. I think the only real difference was just the elusiveness in the backfield for JJ. You know, where he's just scrambling and scrambling. I mean, he had the one play where he ran like 85 yards to gain 9 or something like that. But this wasn't obviously his best game. It wasn't necessarily his worst. That probably was Michigan State last year. But at the same time, it's when you're like, man, yeah, he didn't really have a good game. I got into the post-game press conference and I said, like, yeah, that wasn't the best game for J.J. McCarthy. And Chris Ballas said to me, he's like, and yet he still threw for like 70%. That's a sign of a really good quarterback situation. He didn't have a good game. He went 18 for 26, a 69% completion, 220 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a quarterback rating of 165.7. Now, did he topple a bit in the PFF ratings? Yeah, he did. He's no longer like number 2. He's down at like number 66. But I mean, if you are looking at a situation where you're like, man, he did not have a good game, and he still had what in the Jim Harbaugh era is kind of like top notch. I want to go back and look at this because I think it's important to put this in context. I think it says more about our expectations for not only J.J. McCarthy, but Michigan at this juncture, based off of what we think they can be with this roster, that we are looking at this and saying, like, yeah, not great. You know what I mean? That's the incredible part. So it's not even a low point on the season for Michigan quarterback situations. Colorado State was 206 total yards passing in that game. I know Cade was the starter there. JJ went 4 for 4. But if we were to look at yards passed in each game last year, remember, 220 yards thrown. Western Michigan last year, 216. Washington, 44. Northern Illinois, 233. Rutgers, 163. Wisconsin, 253. Nebraska, 255. No touchdowns and one interception in that one, by the way. Northwestern, 163. MSU, an outlier, 406. Indiana, 223. Penn State, 217. Maryland, 352. And I know that's also a big part of why you would expect this to have been a much different game. You would have expected that he was going to throw the ball around. It's Maryland's. Maryland's defense has historically not been great. So far, they've actually been all right. And not just against Michigan. Ohio State, 190. Iowa, 250. Georgia, 237. But you go back, 2019, it's pretty much like, 220, 232, 259. Then you got Rutgers at 335 in that 52-0 win. 147, 194. Like, we're just, it's all pretty much, that's just what it is. 2016, outside of UCF with 328 yards and Maryland, ironically, with 387, it's all pretty much in the mid, like in the low 200s, mid 200s, high 200s, or even in the 78 to nothing win over Rutgers, 119. You know, that's just, it falls in line with the typical Michigan quarterback stat line. The fact that it doesn't feel good is more of a product of our expectations of what this Michigan offense is, what this Michigan team is, and what J.J. McCarthy is. It wasn't his best game. I'm not out here saying that it was a good game. I don't think it particularly was. He made a couple of big plays. Obviously, the Roman Wilson touchdown was big. There was the one pass to Cornelius Johnson that was big. A couple of them to Luke Schoonmaker were big. But, you know, some of those deep throws, he was overthrowing. There was one where he underthrew. Just did not, even though he went out and said after the game, like, yeah, my arm feels better than it ever has. Felt 110%. It's literally the best my arm has ever felt. I mean, we didn't really see that as far as how it worked on the field. But if this was a bad game for J.J. McCarthy, then there are some opportunities. They're going to go back and they're going to look at a lot of these things, and a lot of these things will be fixed. Listen, Iowa gave up 300 yards passing against Rutgers last week. You can pass on the Hawkeyes. You got to be careful. They'll pick you off. They had a couple of those, including a pick six. It's an opportunistic defense. But there's going to be opportunities there. And it's going to be incumbent upon JJ to continue to be smart. And obviously, I'd like to see the legs a little bit more. I assume they're trying to keep him under wraps due to the fact that they do not have an established backup behind him. And I do feel like Jim Harbaugh is really gun-shy based off of how things kind of played out in 2020. But I would implore them to not be that gun-shy. At least to the point where you got to give them five runs a game, designed runs a game. You just got to. That completely changes the offense. And when you're forcing him to just kind of sit back and throw, the offense ends up being a little bit more anemic by virtue of that. So that is incumbent upon, I think, everybody involved. So grand scheme of the game, I'm going to say some things next that I don't think is out of pocket for any conversations. The things that I was saying coming out of the game was exactly what I've seen on message boards afterwards when I was finally like shutting myself down at 11 o'clock last night. And so I'm not saying anything that's out of the ordinary here, but these are the things that I was thinking about during the game, immediately after the game. But all right, BetOnline.net is your number one source for football betting info this season. Find all of the latest player developments, team matchups, news, podcasts, and in-depth articles and analysis on every game you can find. And as always, BetOnline remains your continued source for all your sports wagering information with live betting and up-to-minute scores for every sport out there. The fastest and easiest way to check in on all of your favorite games and events, including MLB, MMA, boxing, and golf. Head to BetOnline.net or use your mobile device to learn more. BetOnline. Where the game starts. I'll tell you what, the fact that you're getting a Sunday podcast from me, I am dying to death on Sundays. Like, I don't get out of bed much. I just have my laptop or my iPad sitting next to me. I wake up at the crack of 8 or 9. I think today I woke up at 9. And just like, all right, let's just, eyes half open. It's Saturdays are a grind, and as someone who's allergic to field turf, but yet I'm in my seventh season of 8 seasons covering Michigan football of being out on field turf. It doesn't get any easier, but it's amazing to me that back in like 2016, I remember I had a friend in town, and you know, and he was in Ann Arbor, and I was living up in Holly, and I remember riding my motorcycle all the way down to see him. It was a beautiful sunny day. It was the day after Penn State. And I was just like, yeah, you know, whatever. I can't imagine doing that now. Now I'm like, I should go to the grocery store, or I should, you know, go do something. And it's like, and no, I'm not going to do that. Anyway, all right. So I'm not the first one to say this. Certainly, I was saying it during the game. Not that you have any proof of that. But I liken this game in some ways. It's similar. In some ways, it's different to Rutgers last year. I think part of the difference is Michigan was tangibly better than Rutgers in the first half, looked like they were doing to Rutgers what they did to every other team, and then looked awful in the second half. This game was kind of a reverse that to some degree. But even then, like, I thought that it was pretty evident that Michigan looked better than Maryland. Even when things felt really bad and it felt like Maryland was just marching up and down the field, Michigan had still completely outgained the Terps. Going into the halftime, even well before, like a couple minutes beforehand, it felt like Maryland was just like, we're just going to do whatever we're going to do, and you're not going to be able to stop us. Michigan felt like it was really struggling on offense. Michigan still was outgaining the Terps. Again, that's our expectations of Michigan. Rutgers last year, Michigan got out to an early lead and then just did nothing after that. It felt like, all right, we're heading out to blowout city, and it didn't happen. Rutgers came back. Michigan's defense fell short due to injuries. That's another place. I mean, defensively, there weren't the injuries like last year with Josh Ross. You could explain that away. I can't explain that away here, except for the fact that it's Maryland's offense, we know, is typically potent. And this time they had their full complement of guys. They hadn't been beaten down by the season. They went in with a lot of confidence and stuff like that. Michigan's offense, I didn't like a lot of the personnel groupings. I thought that it was really bizarre, the types of guys that they were calling in. I'd like to see that streamlined a little bit more. There was a point, Rick, actually it was about two plays before. No, it was literally right before Roman Wilson got his touchdown. I turned to Bryce and I said, finally, Roman Wilson's in. Where has he been? I don't know where Roman Wilson's been. This has been nuts. Then he finally comes in and makes a giant play. This is going to be a situation where you hope that the coaches self-assess and recognize what they need to do. This is going to be the situation where J.J. McCarthy is going to self-assess and recognize where he can be better. You know, better. This was his first real full start. Truly real full start, right? Because you can't really count the last two games. He played a half each. This is the first time he's played a whole game in a Michigan uniform. He was your starting quarterback. He didn't have other guys shuffling in and out. So it's the start of something. We've seen guys get better in those situations. I think I don't know if I can compare JJ to CJ Stroud yet, of course, but CJ Stroud at the beginning of last year, we saw him grow in game in week two and they still lost that game. He didn't really become who he was until midseason. So expect kind of similar situation if JJ McCarthy has that capability, that type of growth. But again, I want to remind you, last year, if you are really down and out, it's a situation that is eerily similar to the Rutgers game last year, in the sense of Michigan kind of playing down to its competition. Anything that could go wrong did go wrong, and yet Michigan still won. And it looked like a one-score game in the end, but we all know, anyone who watched that game, that at 10 minutes left in the game, there was pretty much no way Michigan was going to lose that game. Barring a pick six or something that was just not going to happen. I shouldn't say not going to happen, but it just didn't happen. But Michigan wasn't the only team also this week that kind of struggled. Penn State, 33-14 against Central Michigan. I think that if Michigan was in that same position, people would be freaking out all the same, right? I don't think that would change. I'm sure that Penn State fans aren't terribly happy, but you know what? You see that from teams every week. And even more alarming, the impenetrable Georgia won 39-22. Now, yes, that game was pretty much shut away by the second half, but I mean, it was 26-13 in the second half. Kent State scored 9 and Georgia scored 13. If Michigan beat Kent State 39-22, everyone would be flipping out. Kent State's 1-3. So really the only teams that looked really good last week, this on Saturday, that are dominant and were then actually went out there and dominated of those top like 10 teams, Alabama 55-3 against Vanderbilt, and unfortunately Ohio State 52-21 against Wisconsin. But I'm already seeing people out there saying they're not going to beat Ohio State, you know, if they play the way that they played against Maryland. Okay, no duh, but they don't play Ohio State for 9 more weeks. This was the same type of stuff that was being uttered last year. Stop trying to extrapolate week 4 into week 13. Michigan got better as the season went along. And heck, they didn't look dominant, really, really dominant until the end of the season. So, yes, I have concerns, particularly on the defense, but specifically because of what Maryland does. But they slowed Maryland down enough, and Michigan scored enough. That's all you need to win a game. Right? It doesn't have to be like, oh, well, they aren't going to beat Ohio State 50-0. No, it just needs to be, it can be 14-13. It can be 28-27. It doesn't really matter. You just have to find a way to slow them down enough and score enough. So, stop trying to figure out what's going to happen in week 13 based off of week 4. Enjoy the 4-0, and not to sound like foundation. Enjoy the peace. Respect and enjoy the peace. But, you know what? They play Iowa. That's a test. Iowa's now 3-1. They found a little bit more offense. They were able to run the ball. They had bunches of turnovers. This is a road game. Weird things have happened in Kinnick. They're going to try to sludge it up. I felt like Maryland kind of sludged things up a little bit. Michigan's got to find a way to go in and be beyond that. And I'll tell you what, if Michigan goes and does to Iowa like it did to Iowa last year, or like it did to Wisconsin in week 5 last year, none of y'all are going to be remembering what happened against Maryland. It's just how it works. It's a palate cleanser. If they're 5-0 and then have Iowa and then Indiana, then suddenly we're starting to look at things different. Penn State looks mortal. They come up in a couple weeks. Those are the teams you have to worry about. Those three teams. Clearly, we don't have to worry as much about Michigan State unless somehow they just... It's pretty hard in season to completely fix the issues that are happening in East Lansing. But weirder things have happened. That is a bad-looking team, though, I'll tell you what. All right, that's going to do it for us today on Sunday. We'll be back on Monday, and we'll continue from there. Back is fully healed, so we are good to go. So thank you for watching and or listening. We'll be back. Peace.